In case you missed it, today is National Grammar Day, and we want to hear from you. Do you have a grammar question, or maybe you have a grammatical pet peeve? Are there certain grammar rules you always get hung up on? You can call in and share at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And given that we both talk on the radio for a living, me and Veronica is always game for some grammar tips. Here to help teach us how to talk real good is Mignon Fogarty, also known as Grammar Girl. She's a podcaster and author of several best-selling grammar books. Mignon, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. That made me cringe just a little bit.
Mission accomplished. Well, tell us a little bit about National Grammar Day. Why are we taking this national day to attend to our grammar?
Well, National Grammar Day was founded by an author named Martha Brockenbrough quite a few years ago now, and it just has caught on because it's so much fun to celebrate grammar online. If you go on Twitter right now and follow the Grammar Day hashtag, you see people baking cookies with punctuation marks on them, celebrating in writing centers at universities. There's a hashtag game called Grammar Movies going on where people are changing the title of movies to have a grammar theme. It's just a blast.
You would think the grammar would be something wonky, but people get really hopped up, passionate, and excited about grammar. How come?
I think we all have to write. You know, it's something we interact with or do ourselves every day, and so everybody feels as if they have a little bit of investment, you know, in the language.
So sometimes when we're talking about people breaking grammar rules, there's a sense that we're getting worse. We're endemifying, if you will. You've made the case that it's not necessarily bad when language changes. It actually can be a natural and decent evolution. Talk about that a little.
Right. Well, if you go back in history and look at the things people objected to in the past, they sound somewhat ridiculous. So in, you know, the 1700s, there was a very prominent grammarian who said we shouldn't use the word who to refer to children because or babies, because who should be reserved for rational beings. So which is just ridiculous today. And, you know, but that's how they thought back then. And so when you look through the long history of words, another one, drapes. Drapes is an Americanism, drapes for the word curtains, and you know it was that word was objected to when it first came into use, and the British sniffed at it as an Americanism and an error. So, you know, there's a long history of objection to things that become normal in standard English over time. So it's when you realize that, it's a lot harder to get worked up about things today.
Seems like some people delight in being sticklers, and other people are sort of more essentialist about it, and their argument is something, you know, like if people have a message and it's clear and it's understood, who cares if the grammar is perfect or not? What do you say to that?
Right. Well, you know, it's part of that language changing. So, you know, you think about Apple's campaign, Think Different. You know, we all know what they meant, and it was actually a very effective marketing message. And there are things in English called flat adverbs. So actually, drive slow, you'll see a lot of people object to that. But if you go to the dictionary, if you listen to usage experts, drive slow is actually fine. Slow is what's called a flat adverb. So, you know, Think Different could have been using that flat adverb idea to make their message. But, you know, also Apple has a history of pushing the boundaries of English. I think Steve Jobs talked about the iPod being the funnest iPod ever or something like that a few years ago, the iPod or the iPhone. You know, so they love to be controversial, too, with their language and get attention by using things that are really pushing the boundaries.
So, Mignon, you sound like you're open to some changes in the way we talk, but in my intentional bad grammar in the lead-up, you said you cringed a bit. So where's the line? Where do we need to make sure or try our best, anyway, to get the grammar right?
I know, it's a tough call, and even though I think language change is fun, I still encourage people to follow, you know, the style guides when they're writing professionally or for school. So if you're writing for a newspaper, you have to follow AP style. And if you're writing a novel, you should follow Chicago style. Like, those are the standards of the industry and what are considered the rules of standard English today. You know, just a few days ago, a friend asked me the same question. He said, well, you know, you like language change, but my friend says that it's fine to write a lot as one word instead of two, and what do you think of that? I'm like, no, that's still an error. So, I think it's one of those you know it when you see it kind of things, and there are standards that are still upheld by the style guides and major publications.
So how do you feel about new words entering the lexicon? Words like, I don't know, twerk and selfie.
Well, they're awfully useful, aren't they? I mean, how else are we going to describe twerking or a selfie? You know, so new things need new names. You know, there are some areas that are those to me seem like examples where we clearly need a word to describe what they are. A word that has been fascinating me lately is adulting. So you hear people in their 20s say things like, oh, adulting is hard. And what they mean is being an adult is hard. You know, my family friend said that, and I was like, well, what did you have to do? And she said, well, I had to go to the bank and open a bank account, and then I had to go to the DMV, and it was just a nightmare. And I knew what she meant. And this word seems to be taking off in pockets of 20-year-olds around the country. If you track it on Twitter, it gets tweeted about 100 times a day. You can find a tweet with the word adulting. And, you know, that annoys some people. You know, they don't like turning nouns into verbs and think
Verbing.
We don't need a word. We can say being an adult or being a grown-up, but it's adulting is more like slang than a new word, and it'll just be a matter of time before we find out whether it catches on and makes its way into the lexicon, into standard English, or if it just stays as that slang of people in their 20s for a few years.
We're talking to Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty about National Grammar Day. We'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. We've got Tim on the line in Eau Claire. Tim, hi.
Hi. I always had a personal war against the apostrophe. I always felt like the word can't doesn't necessarily need an apostrophe to get the point of the word across. Until one of my friends pointed out the combination of who and are. If you drop the A, it becomes a and put an apostrophe. If you don't put the apostrophe, it's a completely different word.
That's so funny. And a rare instance where you use an apostrophe to make things plural is when you're using single letters. So you would write, I got 4 A's on my report card last year, and you would do A apostrophe S. And at least in part, that's because we need to distinguish it from words, so it would look like as instead of as. So it always intrigued me that it's an exception where we really need the apostrophe to make things plural.
A war against the apostrophe sounds like a lonely war to me, probably one that's lost, but that's interesting. Thanks, Tim, for that. And we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line. Judy in Marinette says she thinks part of the problem is that students today aren't taught to diagram sentences, and she thinks if kids did have to diagram sentences, they'd have a better sense of proper structure. What do you think about old-fashioned sentence diagramming?
I love diagramming sentences. I was lucky enough to do it for about a week in grade school, and I really loved it. And then a few years ago, I decided to make a Grammar Girl Christmas card with a diagrammed greeting inside. So I went and bought a bunch of old workbooks and retaught myself how to diagram sentences. And I spent about 3 days on it because I knew I had to get it right if we were going to print all those Christmas cards. And, you know, it really did help me think about sentence structure and modifying phrases and things like that that I had. It gets, I don't know, I think maybe if you're a visual learner, it can help you sort of see a sentence in a different way from how you saw it before when you're just trying to think about adverbs and adjectives and prepositional phrases. When you can put them on an image like that, it gives you a different perspective. So I think for some students, at least, it would probably be very helpful.
We're talking right now with the Grammar Girl, Mignon Fogarty, about common grammar mistakes and your pet peeves.
And we're taking your calls, too. Do you have a question for the Grammar Girl? Do you have a grammatical pet peeve? Or maybe you'd like to offer up your own helpful grammar tip? call in and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're brushing up on our grammar with Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite grammar tip or maybe something that just really bugs you when you hear other people saying it? It's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. We've got Dick on the line in Madison. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Am I on?
Yep, you are.
Okay, I've got a pet peeve about grammar. You keep hearing people, including news anchors, the president, and everybody else, misusing reflexive pronouns. Instead of just a regular pronoun, they say things like, my mother gave a dollar to my brother and myself. Well, it's not giving to yourself. It should be saying to my brother and me.
Ah, good point.
And everybody does it.
Right. Well, thanks for bringing
that
up. I haven't thought about reflexive pronouns in a long time. Can you give us a quick 101, Mignon?
You bet. Well, I remember the name by thinking of seeing your reflection in a mirror. So you would say, I see myself, and that's the proper use of a reflexive pronoun. So the myself refers to something that came earlier in the sentence. You're reflecting back. That's a little bit redundant, but you're reflecting back to the mention of yourself earlier in the sentence. So you need that first I before you can use a reflexive to go back to myself. So I see myself in the mirror, and himself, herself, ourselves, those are all reflexive pronouns. They can also be used for emphasis. So you can say, I baked the cake myself. You know, that means the same thing as I baked the cake. Means the identical thing, but if you add the myself, you're adding emphasis. So those are the two common ways that you would use myself. Now, the caller's correct that you often hear people say things, especially in business and speeches when they're trying to sound smart or important. People will say, you know, send the memo to Bob and myself. Well, really, it should be Bob and me. You want the object pronoun me in that case. So the caller's right.
I'm sure I've made that mistake myself. But I just used it right that time, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, thanks.
Yep.
Dick, thanks for the call. We'll go to Eric now in Madison. Eric, hi.
Hi. So I have a question on the use of, with the contraction of they have and adding got on the end. So they've got, I've got, we've got. What's the proper way to do that? I mean, or is that even proper, or is that just a local use?
Oh, so it sounds redundant. They have got a something. Mignon, what do you think?
I'm trying to remember. Off the top of my head, I know that you can use got for emphasis. So you can say, you know, you have got to see this fish at the aquarium. And I know that that use is considered okay for got. Off the top of my head, I can't remember about the other uses, but it's sometimes at least it's okay for emphasis.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Eric.
And we'll go next to Sandy in Libertyville, Illinois. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. Hi, Sandy. No, that's me.
Hi, myself.
It gets confusing.
I have a bit of a literal pet peeve. I'm very active in the animal welfare and rescue world. We will often see ads for animals that are up for adoption that describe the animal. Loves this, loves to do this, and loves to be pet. Hmm. Now, what I think they're saying is the animal loves to be petted. But it has become universal to say Buffy loves to be pet. And what amazes me is that it's caught on and that everybody's using it, and it's making me question, well, is petted not a real word?
Right. Okay, thanks, Sandy. So, Mignon, is there an epidemic of confusing pet with petted?
There is. We did a Grammar Girl podcast about it a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember which one is right. I know it comes up with grit and gritted, too. You could say he grit his teeth or he gritted his teeth. It looks as if these verbs, some of them are evolving to become shorter like that. So, gosh, I would say I would say check the Grammar Girl website. I search my own website actually quite often because I can't remember everything we've covered either. We've done more than 450 different episodes, so there's a lot to remember when it comes to English.
My money's on Petted.
Me
I'd
too.
Love to know which
I'm
one
going
it
Petted.
Is. Maybe we'll look for it and come back tomorrow and tell you.
Could be in Flux, okay. though. Could be one in Flux.
True.
Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Paula with us in Oshkosh. Paula, hi.
Hi, good to hear this program. Thank you. It makes my ears bleed when I hear it, my eyes bleed when I see it, when people do orientated or orientating. I'm pretty sure it's still oriented or orienting. So it's become my mission to educate everybody that comes in front of me.
Yeah, that sounds like one, Mignon, thanks for that, Paula, we're one where, well, this sounds fancier and more educated, so it's probably right, when in fact we don't need that extra syllable at all.
Right. Yes. And, you know, the two words mean the same thing, orient and orientate. They both exist. You'll find them both in the dictionary. But an orient is the older verb, but orientate has been around for quite a long time, too.
So it's not necessarily wrong, it sounds like.
No, it's not. But
sorry,
orient
Paula.
Is the preferred form in American English.
Ah.
So this is an American English versus British English difference. So we'll say, orient the chairs toward the sun. In Britain, they would say orient or orientate. They sort of coexist as equally acceptable alternatives. But it looks like the American preference is orient.
Thanks, Paula. Don't move to the UK.
All right. Do we have time for one more quick call? Karen in Portage, you're on.
Yeah. So one that I notice a lot of people do nowadays is they would say, like, it's almost like they're answering a question for somebody. Like if they were saying, do you want to go to the movie or not? Instead of saying or not, they say, do you want to go to the movie or no?
Okay, well, that's something that you hear here in Wisconsin. I think
I've done it.
Oh, I see. I thought you were gesturing to me because I do that
too.
What about that one? Is that one charming, Mignon?
I'm guessing that that's probably a regionalism that is specific to your area because I haven't heard it before. And there are things that people say in different regions. Is needs washed one of the things they say in Wisconsin? The car needs washed?
No, that's not a local thing here, no.
No, okay, that must be somewhere else. That might be Pittsburgh. But there are these regionalisms, and or no, I've never heard it. So my guess would be that it's something specific to your area.
Mignon, thank you so much for joining us and talking grammar.
You're welcome, and thank you, and happy National Grammar Day.
Happy National Grammar Day back at you. We've been speaking with Mignon Fogarty, best-selling author and host of the podcast Grammar Girl.